me, and try not to draw faces on these guys on the bulletin either. All right, let's turn together to John chapter 13, John 13. The Gospel of John is in the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and then the book of John. And John 13 is where we're going to be this morning. If you want to use the blue Bible that's in front of you, it's on page 900. John 13 is on page 900 there. John chapter 13. This morning we're going to look at verses 1 through 17. John 13, starting in verse 1. Here's what God's word to us says through John. Chapter 13, verse 1. Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, when the devil had already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper. He laid aside his outer garments and, taking a towel, tied it around his waist. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, do you wash my feet?" Jesus answered him, "What I am doing you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand." Peter said to him, "You shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered him, "If I don't wash you, you have no share with me." Simon Peter said to him, "Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and my head." Jesus said to him, "The one who is bathed does not need to wash except for his feet, but is completely clean. And you are clean, but not every one of you." For he knew who was to betray him. That was why he said, "Not all of you are clean." When he had washed their feet and put on his outer garments and resumed his place, he said to them, "Do you understand what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you also should do just as I have done to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them." In our world, the majority of our world, serving is not something that is often celebrated. It's not something that is often recognized. No one is competing to see who can serve the most. I haven't seen that competition happen a lot. But in every arena of life, you can find a competition to see who can be served the most. And in our world, in our culture especially, greatness is about those who have others to serve them, whether a CEO at a company or a celebrity that has a lot of people, or even on our level, someone who just has a lot of connections and networks and people that are doing things for them. Because in our culture, it's often seen better to be served than it is to serve. I just read this week, actually, about a new service that's available on not all college campuses, but a growing number of college campuses, called a campus concierge. You've heard of hotels having a concierge, but now some college campuses have concierges, and there's these companies that are popping up that will provide, for a fee, of course, a person that will come for the student and will do their laundry, will make their bed, will organize their dorm room, will put together a care package when they're sick, will provide them, this is what the website said, academic support, whatever that means. Sounds a little shady, but it's meant to be kind of like your mom away from mom kind of thing. And you can pay hundreds of dollars per school year to have this person come and help serve you. Being served seems like it's better than serving until you hold that idea up next to the Bible. And then it seems like the complete opposite. Throughout the year, this whole year, we've been highlighting various rhythms that grow our relationships. We've been doing this because big picture is the direction of my life and the direction of your life is shaped by our relationships, and our relationships are shaped by rhythms that we have. So if you as a family, if it's your thing to have this rhythm of eating together at a table or eating together in the van on the way to the next thing, that rhythm is shaping your relationships. If you and your spouse or you and your significant other have a rhythm of a date night or going out together, that rhythm is shaping your relationship. And so we want to think about the rhythms because the relationships shape who we are and help our faithfulness to the Lord. More specifically, as followers of Jesus, there are three key relationships that we talk about all the time here at our church. Our relationship with God, our relationship with each other in the church, and our relationship with the world. So over this year, we've highlighted rhythms that grow our relationship with God, like reading the Bible, praying, gathering together at church. We've highlighted rhythms that grow our relationship with the world, like sharing the gospel with other people, hospitality towards those who don't know Christ. And today, we're going to highlight a rhythm that is meant to strengthen our relationship with each other as a church, as God's people. And that's the rhythm of serving. The rhythm of serving. With each of these rhythms, we've tried to provide a statement that says we do this rhythm not just because this is just the good moral thing to do. The Bible gives us much more of a foundation and fuel than that. So this morning, our statement is this, that we serve others because Jesus has served us. We serve others because Jesus serves us. A simple statement, nothing amazingly profound that blew your mind in that sentence, but one that if we think about it carefully, there's a lot for us to consider here. We serve others because Jesus serves us. So what we're going to do as we look at John 13 is I'd like for us to look at how Jesus' service to us leads us to be the kind of people who faithfully serve each other. We want to look at Jesus before we look at ourselves. Oftentimes we come to the Bible and we read whatever it is that we read and then immediately jump to ourselves, well, how am I supposed to live this or obey this or think about this? But want to make sure we read, go to Jesus, and then to ourselves. And that's what we're going to do here. So the first thing is this. I want us to see the heart of Jesus. See the heart of Jesus here in John 13. When you and I hear the word serve, we most likely think of an action, something that we are supposed to immediately do or be about. And we'll get to that, but it's true Christian service actually starts on the inside in your heart and then moves outward, and we see that really clearly in this story. This story may or may not be familiar to you, but the act of Jesus washing the disciples' feet is not some random thing. It's actually an expression of his heart towards his disciples. I'll show you what I mean. Let's look together at verse 1. Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, here's the part where we get a glimpse of Jesus' heart. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. There's two observations I'd like for us to see here. The first one comes a little earlier in verse 1. He says, when Jesus knew that his hour had come. When Jesus knew that his hour had come. You see multiple times throughout the Gospels where somebody will approach Jesus with something and he'll say, no, my hour is not yet here. My hour has not yet come. And here it says that Jesus knew his hour had arrived, meaning the end goal that everything in Jesus' life was moving towards, it was time. Actually, the moment that all of history was waiting for had come. Jesus' hour refers to the time when he's going to go to the cross to die. Jesus is saying, it's time for me to set my attention on what I came to do. As Jesus prepares to celebrate this Passover meal with his disciples, he knows it's time to finally and fully accomplish what he came to earth to accomplish. And that's our salvation. That's my rescue and your rescue. But notice Jesus doesn't think the cross is going to be the end. And John doesn't either. Verse 1 again. When Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father. It doesn't just say to go to the cross. That was part of it. But it's even looking past that. Jesus was on his way back to his Father in heaven, and he was going through the cross and resurrection to get there. Jesus was on his way to conquer sin, to conquer death, and return to heaven. And it's all this weighty stuff that we keep in mind when we hear John write, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. Everything that Jesus did on earth, everything that Jesus did, especially in the final days of his life, was motivated by the love for the people he came to save. Of course, he's thinking about the disciples that are right in front of him, but he's also thinking about anyone who would ever put their trust in him for salvation. It is not a stretch to say that in these moments right here that we're reading about in the Gospel of John, you were on Jesus's mind. Jesus was thinking about you. He was thinking about me. He was thinking about generations of people that have trusted him and will trust him. And it says, this is one of my favorite phrases in the whole chapter, at the end of chapter 1, he loved them to the end. The end, I think, has some layers of meaning here. I think it means that Jesus loved his disciples to the very end of his life, and he loved them to the fullest extent possible. Because Jesus' commitment to his people, it never weakens. His commitment to his people never wavers. He loves his people to the end, and he always loves his people to the end. And then verse 3 adds another angle to this love. Look with me at verse 3. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going back to God. Jesus does what he's about to do because he knows exactly who he is. This is not the act that Jesus is about to do as he washes the disciples' feet is not some identity crisis because he's like, I don't really know who I am, so this I'm just going to do this and try this. He knows exactly who he is and that he is fully God. He is all-powerful. He's in control of all things. John says, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands. The love that motivates Jesus in the act that we're about to see is not a sentimental love. It is a sovereign love. It is a powerful love. It is an all-knowing love. It is a love that none of us can fully comprehend. And what he's about to do is he's about to act out a parable. We've heard Jesus tell parables. Now he's about to act out a parable that points us to the ultimate picture of this love when he dies on the cross, where his saving love and his saving power meet in the most full and perfect display you could ever see. So we serve others because Jesus serves us. And this means that to serve like Jesus serves, we need a heart like Jesus' heart. Now, no, he's fully God. We are not. We cannot fully arrive at his level. But what I'm saying is that what makes the way a Christian serves unique is the heart of how we serve. You could have someone who doesn't know Christ doing the same act of service as someone who doesn't know Christ. And on the outside, it looks the same, but the heart is completely different. It's different because for those who trust in Christ, our service is animated by the love of Jesus through us towards other people. It's not animated by me trying to look good or look religious or look impressive. It's animated by the love Jesus has shown me that he wants to show through me to other people. So what this means is that serving doesn't start with a role or a position. We don't just serve when we have a title of some kind or a job of some kind. Serving starts with a relationship. Our relationship with Christ that then shapes how we relate to each other. Well, I'm not a life class teacher, or I'm not a deacon, or I'm not helping in this ministry, or I'm not doing that, so I don't really have a place to serve. We all have a place to serve because we all have people to serve. We all have opportunities to serve because there's always needs in our church and in our community. So we want to make sure serving starts with a relationship because it's the love of Christ in our hearts that sparks true service to other people. And what's so significant here in John 13 is that what Jesus' heart feels towards his people is seen in what his hands do. So that's the next part I want us to see, is watch the hands of Jesus. We've seen the heart of Jesus. Now watch the hands of Jesus. We just read in verse 3 that Jesus knew the Father had given all things into his hands. Now watch what those all-powerful, almighty hands do. We stop mid-sentence in verse 3. So let's go back a little bit and then continue into verse 4. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper. He laid aside his outer garments and, taking a towel, tied it around his waist. Whether you're familiar with this story or not, what happens next should shock all of us. If you've grown up in church or you've been around Bible stories, I know what Jesus is about to do. No big deal. I've heard it over and over. This should floor us that Jesus does what he does. So I want to pause here and just take this moment in. I want you to put yourself in the room. It's this small rented room in a house in Jerusalem that Jesus and his 12 disciples have gathered in. They are taking the Passover meal together. There's conversation happening. Jesus is about to institute the Lord's Supper that we get to celebrate this morning. And as they're sharing this meal and there's talk back and forth and they've been through so much together over the past 3 years, Jesus gets up. He gets up from the table and he starts to put on essentially a servant's uniform. He starts to put on a slave's uniform. And with his hands, he takes off his outer cloak, like me taking off this jacket. And with his hands, he picks up a towel. And with his hands, he ties the towel around his waist. Any conversation that was going on among the disciples would have stopped because they see what he's doing. Some jaws might be hanging open. Like, is Jesus really doing what it looks like he's about to do? Can you imagine the look of surprise on their faces when they see Jesus doing this? Well, it gets even more shocking. Look at verse 5. Then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. What I love about the way John tells the story, it's almost as if he tells us the story in slow motion. He tells us every movement Jesus makes, that he took off his outer garment, he ties the towel around his waist, he pours the water into the basin, because he wants us to feel the weight of what's happening here. He pours the water into the bowl and then goes around to the disciples who are gathered around the table and kneels down before each of them and washes their dirty feet. Now, for our day, washing feet seems like a strange thing, but in that day, having your feet washed was fairly normal. In that day and in that part of the world, everyone wore sandal-like shoes and walked around on dusty dirt roads. That those roads were also not just shared with people, but livestock that were pulling things and doing work. And so you can imagine how dirty your feet would get as you walked around the city doing your chores and doing the things you needed to do. So it was a custom of the day for when you went to someone's house, a slave or a servant would wash the guest's feet when they entered the house to clean off the dirt and mud and sweat and animal waste that was on their feet. Jesus and his disciples were in a borrowed room, so there was no servant there. There was no slave ready to wash their feet. So in this moment, the highest, most powerful one in the room becomes the lowest, most generous one in the room. In the Gospel of Luke, he tells us something really interesting, that around this same time, this is in Luke 22, verse 24, around this same time, he says, a dispute also arose among the disciples as to which of them was the greatest. Can you picture this with me? And we don't know the exact order of events, but can you picture the disciples gathered around the table in the room and they get to talking before Jesus is doing anything and they start to get in this argument about which of them is the greatest? And we've just read, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and he had come from God and was going back to God, and you have these 12 normal, blue-collar, dirty feet men who are arguing about which one of them is the greatest. And they're in the presence of the King of the universe that is giving them every breath they take to use to argue which of them is the greatest. While in the presence of the all-powerful God of the universe, the disciples are arguing about which one of them is the most powerful, the one most worthy of attention and service. While the almighty King of the world becomes a servant, they fight and argue. We can't act like the same temptation doesn't exist among us. We can't point and laugh at the disciples. Man, those guys are such morons. I'm so glad we're not like that. And you remember, God's word is a mirror for us. And we like to often think we're Jesus in the story, but in this story, we're not Jesus. We're the disciples. And if you and I spend our time arguing in our thought life or in our words about which of us is most deserving of attention or most deserving of recognition or most deserving of being served, we will never truly serve one another. If we only expect to be served, we won't look for ways to serve. If our attention is only on us, we're not looking to the people God has put around us to serve. But here, we see the one who more than anyone ever deserved to be served, but we see him serving. And he's going down the line of the disciples, and he comes to Peter. And Peter has this interaction with Jesus in verse 6. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, Lord, do you wash my feet? So Peter sees, this is not how this is supposed to be. Verse 7, Jesus answered him, what I am doing, you do not understand now, but afterward you will understand. So Peter somewhat protests Jesus' actions. Jesus, you're washing my feet. And Jesus tells him, you don't understand right now, but you're going to understand afterward. He says in verse 7, afterward you will understand. He means the disciples would not understand the fuller meaning of this until after Jesus died and rose again. This is because this selfless act of service in the upper room that they're in is meant to foreshadow the greatest selfless act ever committed by a person when Jesus dies on the cross. And Jesus is doing this to show them what he's going to do. And this scene in John 13, this simple scene, is an acting out of everything that we've read in Philippians chapter 2 this morning. Everything that has happened in that passage you see here in Philippians 2. Let me show you what I mean. Jesus rose from supper just as he rose from his throne in heaven to come to earth. Jesus set aside his garments in John 13, just as he temporarily set aside his glory to come and save us. He took a towel in John 13 and wrapped it around him, just as he took on the form of a servant and came to save us. He poured water into a basin just as he was about to pour out his blood on the cross. He washed the disciples' feet to show them that he was about to wash away their sin. In this one scene, Jesus acts out the story of his entire life. The story of his mission to come and save sinners like me and like you. And that's why Jesus goes on to say in verse 8, Peter tells him, "You shall never wash my feet." That word "never" is almost like to eternity. This will never happen, Jesus. You will never wash my feet. And Jesus answered him, "If I do not wash you, you have no share with me." Jesus is saying to Peter and to us, the only way to be saved by Jesus is to be served by Jesus. Coming to Jesus means coming to the end of yourself. For those of you here this morning that you haven't trusted Christ, you don't know Christ, maybe you're not sure about Jesus or the claims of the Bible or church or Christianity or whatever that is, I want you to know that to come to Christ means emptying your hands of any effort or performance on your part and submitting to what his hands have done. We have to lay aside every idea that we know better than God. We have to lay aside every idea that we don't really need Jesus. We're fine on our own. And by humbly letting Jesus serve us is the only way any of us can be made right with God. Well, Jesus can serve me a little bit, but then I also need to do A, B, and C. I need to do my part. No, there is no my part, your part in salvation. The only thing we bring to the equation of salvation is our sin, is our need. Jesus 100% saves. So you watch the hands of Jesus. We've seen the heart of Jesus. And lastly, Jesus gives us a call to follow the example of Jesus. Follow the example of Jesus. In the final part of this scene, Jesus explains what all this means for how his followers should live and relate to each other. And this is a weighty truth for us to take in. Look at what Jesus says in verse 12. When he had washed their feet and put on his outer garments and resumed his place, he said to them, "Do you understand what I've done to you?" Verse 13, he says, "You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet." Jesus goes from greater to lesser here. He's saying, if I, the greater, your Lord and teacher, have served you, then how much more should you, the lesser, serve one another like this? If I've loved you and served you in this way, then you, as my disciples, as my followers, how much more should you love and serve one another in this way? And then he continues in verse 15. He says, "For I have given you an example that you also should do just as I have done to you." He's given us an example to follow. To follow Jesus is to serve others the way Jesus has served us. And in this story, Jesus has given us a metaphor that should make us all ask, is this how we love one another? Do we sacrificially serve one another like this? Do we give up of our time and our energy and our resources to serve one another like this? Do we consistently wash one another's feet? Are we looking for opportunities to do that? Now, I don't mean that we're actually to take our shoes and socks off and wash each other's feet. But rather, we're called to humbly consider each other as more important than ourselves. I know that's a common verse that maybe you're familiar with, but if you think about what it means to actually embody that and live that, do we consider each other more important than ourselves? Or are we like the disciples just arguing with each other about which of us is the greatest? If we truly follow Christ, our lives will be characterized by humbly serving each other. One of the main ways, not the only way, but one of the main ways we show we are disciples of Christ is by caring for others, for each other, like Jesus cares for us. And you hear this in verse 17. This is the end of the passage we read. Jesus says in verse 17, if you know these things, blessed are you if you, what's he say? Do them. Blessed, happy, joyful, favored by God are you if you do them. Not blessed are you if you just think about these things. Not blessed are you if you just talk about these things. We are really good at talking about things that sound good, but then we just leave it in that Bible study or in that church service or in that conversation. Not blessed are you if you just learn about these things. Blessed are you if you do them. So let's think carefully about what this looks like. The hard part of this is that this starts with your closest relationships. This starts with your own family, your own friend group. It's easier to come and serve at church than it is to serve at home. That's easier. It is easier for me to stand up here and preach a sermon or help with a particular event than it is for me to serve my wife and my kids. So this has to start there for all of us. It's easier to serve someone you don't know than it is to serve the people that know you the best. Jesus didn't do this for high-ranking, powerful people. He did this for his disciples. And the example of Jesus should remind all of us that none of us are ever too important for ordinary relationships. And that the most ordinary, the most common, the closest relationships are in our lives are the most important opportunities for us to serve. What are specific ways you could consistently wash the feet of those in your home? What are specific ways you could consistently serve those in your group of friends or those in your life class, those on your team at school, those in your classes at school? What are specific ways you could serve those people? Are you the person who's always getting your way? Are you the person that's preferring other people's way? When you go home in the afternoon from school or from work or whatever it may be, when you wake up in the morning, are you waking up or going home with the expectation to be served or with a readiness to serve whatever the needs or opportunities are? Now, let me acknowledge here that different people need to hear these truths in different ways. Jesus says that we also ought to wash one another's feet. So this is a call for all of us to humble ourselves and to serve. But for some, this encouragement is going to sound different than for others. Let me tell you what I mean. For some, this is an encouragement to serve, to get your hands dirty and serve. Because washing each other's feet means we cannot have a passive, consumer-minded attitude in our relationships with each other. Our question in our relationships with each other is not, what do I get out of this? Our question is, what can I contribute here? How can I serve? So we ask the Lord, God, give us a mindset of not just consuming, but also contributing. Because as a church, one author said it this way, as a church, we are not to view the church the same way we view the place we go to lunch after church. So when you show up here or in your relationships with people from here, do you show up ready to be served? Or are you showing up to serve? We need you to serve, not just because this ministry is going on or this thing is happening, but because we all need to be faithful to Christ, and our church is only as healthy as our individual relationships with Jesus. So we have a responsibility to each other to serve each other. Secondly, and this is what I mean by different groups of people need to hear this differently, and this might sound weird, but let me explain myself. Some of you need to hear this when Jesus says we ought to also wash one another's feet. Some of you might need to hear this as an encouragement to be served. Well, Cam, you just spent 3 hours talking about the benefit of serving and how we need to serve and serve and serve and serve, and now you're saying some of us need to be served? Yeah. Washing each other's feet means we can't always be the one who's doing the washing. Just like never serving is rooted in pride, only serving is also pride. If we never humble ourselves and let other people serve us. Because we think things like, no, I have to be the one to do this. No one else can do this the way I do this. And we have this need to be needed. And so we're actually not serving each other sometimes. We're actually using each other to fulfill some kind of insecurity that we have. And listen, I'm saying this as someone who's guilty of this. That sometimes our serving is more about us than it is about the people we're serving, so therefore it's not actually serving. We're using people to love ourselves. To all of us, Jesus says, humble yourself before me and follow my example. So as we wrap up and prepare to take the Lord's Supper this morning, how are we serving? How are we walking in obedience to these passages? I heard a pastor say once, and this, I didn't like this statement. I probably still don't like this statement, but it's one I need to try to swallow. You know whether you are really a servant based on how you react when someone treats you like a servant. When you don't get the credit, you don't get the recognition, when nobody comes up and says, hey, you did a really good job with that. You don't receive praise. That's when you know you're serving. So we ask the Lord, like we just sang a minute ago, to guide us in the way of sacrifice. Guide us in the way of service. Lord, make nothing below us. Make no one below us. And we each take up the towel and serve. And we serve others because Jesus serves us. So we see the heart and hands of Jesus, and we ask him to transform our heart and our hands so we can follow his example. And we have the perfect opportunity to continue learning this truth as we come and celebrate the Lord's Supper together. Let's pray, and we'll step into that.